Moving along, our next presenter is Dr. Amit Pradaganda. He is a research associate in the Department of Forest Resources and the Center for Changing Landscapes at the University of Minnesota. His research centers on investigating the human, social, and policy dimensions of natural resources in the context of water resource, forest, invasive species, and recreation resource management, as well as climate change adaptation. He also provides training in social science assessment methods to natural resource professionals from state and local agencies and organizations. Welcome, Dr. Pradaganda.
All right, thank you. Thank you so much for having me here today. I'm really excited about this, and I'm just gonna time myself here. All right, thank you again for having me here, and I'm going to be presenting about a study that's a survey of local government unit staff across the state trying to assess capacity for groundwater protection. So I am a social scientist, and I'm with the Center for Changing Landscapes here at the University of Minnesota. I'm also affiliated with the Department of Forest Resources. So as a social scientist, I study primarily the human dimensions around natural resource issues. We've done studies around at the Center for Changing Landscapes, we've done studies around conservation practice adoption, groundwater protection. We've done some studies around aquatic invasive species and behaviors related to the prevention of spread of aquatic invasive species. We've also done studies trying to understand park and trail visitor experiences and perhaps their trends into going into the future. So for today, before I get into the presentation, a lot of my studies use survey methods. I also do a lot of qualitative studies, which would primarily, for me, are interviews and focus groups to try to dig a little deeper into the data and try to understand how different stakeholders perceive issues, how they interact with natural resources, and how that might have an influence on natural resource management. So this map up here shows a range of projects in different watersheds that we've either already completed or are in the process of completing. This doesn't necessarily include, this only includes the last few years. It doesn't include a lot of studies where we've done interviews and focus groups, other watersheds and collaborators and stakeholders where we provided training on social science research methods and analysis. So for today, as this crowd is probably already aware, the major concerns around groundwater in Minnesota focus around both groundwater quantity, so there's issues around increasing groundwater use, as well as pollution, so issues around nitrates and other pollutants. So one of the things I try to tell myself every time I present is, really think about the why question. And the first why question I kind of ask myself, and it's weird, I do this with myself. I present and then I act like I'm the audience and then I ask myself questions again. So the first why question I thought of is, why social science? Why social science in this area of groundwater management? So groundwater management and addressing groundwater issues, groundwater protection, it's not only about the biophysical aspects of groundwater, it's also about the people that are involved. Because after all, it is the people, whether that's state agency staff, local government unit, SWCDs, or landowners and residents that take action. It's the people that develop strategies and plans, and it's the people that implement plans, programs, and practices. So it's really critical that we understand the perspectives of different stakeholders and how they perceive groundwater issues, how they may or may not take certain types of actions, how supportive they are of groundwater strategies and plans across the state. So in that line, with that line of thought, the broad objective, the goal of this particular study was to understand the capacities and constraints associated with groundwater protection at the local level. So with this particular study, it's the local level here is defined as local government units. So we did a survey with city and county staff across the state. This study is an expansion of and also complements a past study we conducted in 2015. A statewide survey of all Soil and Water Conservation District, SWCD staff, a very similar type of study, also doing a capacity assessment. And I'll go into this idea of what is capacity? So what is community capacity? it's a concept that's very widely used in social sciences, in areas such as community development, public health, and it's more widely used now also in the areas of natural resource management, particularly within kind of the social sciences, human dimensions world. And what it is so think of there's different types of capitals, different types of resources within any given community. There's the natural capital, so we have all kinds of natural resources. There's people that have skills and knowledge. There are organizations that bring more resources into communities. And these are all kind of described within the social science world as capitals. So these are all resources that exist within a community. And when it's when these resources are leveraged to solve collective problems, that's where we use this term capacity. So when resources are, when there's the interaction of that human capital, resources, the social capital, and interaction between individuals and organizations, that are leveraged and used to solve collective problems, and that's really how we define community capacity. And so where this idea of capacity is useful is when you think of different communities, some communities are better, are more effective at working together collectively and addressing environmental natural resource issues, while others are not quite there yet. And so this idea of community capacity really helps us understand it's a framework to try to track and understand why there are these differences between communities. So taking that idea a step further then, May Davenport, who's a professor over in Forest Resources, developed this multi-level community capacity model. And what it really does is it gives us a framework that identifies different levels of capacities. So it's one thing to define this broader idea of what capacity means, but this really gives us a sense for, you know, what are these different levels and different measures that we need to use to track changes in how communities are able or not able to address issues. And this is a framework that was also used to develop the social measures monitoring system. So May, along with interagency partners, developed the social measures monitoring system, which is going to be used across the state to track changes in capacity. It's really a framework, one, it helps us understand how communities change in terms of their capacity over time. And second, if there are any water-related, groundwater, or any other natural resource issue, really, programs and policies that are being implemented, it also helps us track and evaluate the effectiveness of those programs. So going through this, so what do all these different levels of capacity mean? So at an individual level, any given community has people. So there's individuals within any community, and the people then have core knowledge and skills around issues and topics. They may have certain levels of awareness and concern, for example, about groundwater. We also try to track the sense of responsibility that different individuals may feel around groundwater. And then, obviously the big one is behavior. So what actions are people taking now? What actions are they likely to take? And then at the relational level, so the relational capacity is really all about how individuals connect with one another. What are the relationships between individuals? So what this idea of sense of community, so are people well connected to one another? How do they, perhaps through informal networks, share information with one another? At the organizational level, again, this is about the organizations that exist within a community that may help us reach certain water quality or community goals. So at this level, we're really trying to analyze and understand and track leadership within the organizations, how diverse are these organizations and what types of issues do they address, and then what is the identity and mission of organizations and what types of organizations exist within a community. At the programmatic level, then, it's really about understanding, well, what are different types of programs that exist in a community that are taking us towards these broader water resource or community goals. So these programmatic capacity, examples would be, how do organizations or how are programs and plans implemented? Is there coordination across different groups, and how well does that coordination work? what are different types of resources that are available for communities to, one, develop their own capacities, but also to broadly to reach those outcomes and reach those water resource-related goals. So these were kind of the four broad capacity levels that were first developed. And with more research, particularly with diverse communities here in the Twin Cities, we added this fifth level of capacity. We called it the justice capacity, which is really about how inclusive is water resource planning and management, for example. What is the level of trust between organizations, between individuals and organizations? What is the level of trust in the sources of information that individuals are receiving? The other issue is equity. So, are impacts of programs and policies, are they equitably distributed? So both the negative impacts, perhaps, and as well as the benefits. And then the legitimacy issues is becoming more and more important, where we look at, are organizations, agencies, or other groups seen as the legitimate authority to address different types of issues. So, as you can see, this is a pretty broad, pretty holistic approach to try to track how communities do in terms of addressing issues. And we've used this framework around groundwater protection, around more surface water types of issues, around water quality goals and so forth. So one of the things to note about this framework is that it's not necessarily the boxes and the circles where things happen. There's a lot of interaction because social systems, human systems, are very dynamic. There's individuals, organizations, and programs, and relationships, and it's not really happening within individual boxes. It's a very dynamic process. So one of the ways I do like to actually represent this is in terms of like concentric circles, where you look at, there's individuals that exist within a larger context of, different social relationships and organizations and programs, and each one may have an effect on another. So for example, if you think of how individuals might share knowledge with one another, that may have a direct impact at the individual capacity level in terms of how individuals take direct action to address issues. So if they're in communities where there isn't a strong sense of community, you might see that individuals are not very engaged, very involved in addressing issues. And I have this justice capacity here kind of going across all of these other four levels of capacity because it's, for me, it's really the foundation. So without trust in communities, we are not going to see individuals taking action. Without legitimacy of organizations, you will not perhaps see relational capacity develop within communities. So with that bit of theory, I'll go into a bit more of the findings here from the study. So we had two broad goals for the study, two broad objectives. One is to assess capacities, and more importantly here also to identify, using this framework, what are the constraints to groundwater protection at the local level. And secondly, we also want to identify, and we did this through the survey by asking about what needs do LGU staff have in terms of groundwater protection. So again, identifying as well as prioritizing the needs at the local level. So like I mentioned, this is a survey of LGU staff across the state. The survey was sent out to 1,654. These are non-elected positions. So these are staff that are connected to environmental natural resource management in some way. The map here shows the distribution of our list and respondents. So all 87 counties are represented in this study, also represented are 700 cities. This list we obtained from the League of Minnesota Cities and the Association of Minnesota Counties. The survey was developed, so this is administered online, so we developed the survey using Qualtrics, which is becoming a standard survey program we use here at the university. We use this three-wave method of surveying, which means that we contacted our potential participants, our list, three times over the period from February to March of last year. And this is done to try to enhance response rate. We got 483 completed surveys, which is about 29% response rate. The surveys took about 25 to 30 minutes to complete. So I'll jump right into the findings here. Just briefly to characterize the audience for the survey, we asked about what role do they play that relates directly to groundwater. And you can see that there is a broad range of roles. Perhaps most prevalent is planning. So there's a lot of planners among our respondents. There's also people who do monitoring, administration, a lot of focus around practice implementation as well as education outreach. One of the things you'll notice is if you quickly add up all these numbers, they don't really add up to 100%, and that's because people could have multiple roles, so they were allowed to check multiple roles and multiple boxes on this survey for this particular question. So you might have someone who does planning but may also put a little bit of effort towards education and outreach, for example. So I have these findings organized based on my study objectives. So what are, firstly, looking at the capacities and constraints associated with groundwater protection. There is quite a bit of data in this survey, and I do not really present everything that's on here. We do have a report that's pulled together that has all of the findings from the survey. Here I'm really focused on key points from the survey. So in the survey, we asked about the LGU staff's level of technical expertise around groundwater quality and quantity issues. So I like to use this analogy of yellow, green, and red. So anytime you see red, there it's more in the positive direction. Anytime you see red or yellow, I would say stop and think about those numbers a little bit. A majority of our participants, so these are also all self-reported levels of expertise and self-reported levels of capacity. Over 60% of our participants, respondents reported that their level of expertise in groundwater quantity is good to very good, whereas a little over 40%, so that's about 45% or so, that reported that their level of expertise in groundwater quality is good to very good. So you can see a little bit of a discrepancy between perhaps technical expertise on quantity issues versus quality issues. We also asked on the survey about what types of issues and land uses that may be related to groundwater that they think are a problem for groundwater. So this is a way to measure their concern around groundwater issues. And these are the top five in terms of just averages, in terms of means, top five issues that our participants seem most concerned about. So tile drainage, about 70% of our participants believe that it's a slight to severe problem for groundwater. But these, most of these numbers are a majority of participants believe that these are a slight to severe problem for groundwater. So one of the questions we used also to assess capacity of organizations to address groundwater issues was a more direct question of, what organizations have the capacity to protect groundwater in their area? And we listed a range of organizations. So one of the things you could see here is that the LGUs, only about 50% of our participants agreed that their LGU has the capacity to protect groundwater. But close to 70% believe that state-level agencies actually have more capacity to protect groundwater. So there's a little bit of, again, kind of gap in organizational capacity that you can see here. The other set of questions, so these are questions trying to get at programmatic capacity. So again, these the ideas of coordination and a vision for planning into the future, those types of ideas. And this is where we identify, real gaps in capacity as well. About close to about 40% of participants agreed that local plans reflect a widely shared vision for groundwater protection. Also very interesting numbers here for questions around, are there any cross-sector, cross-jurisdictional groups that exist to share data about groundwater issues, but also to coordinate groundwater protection? So there's a lot of uncertainty and also some disagreement that there are any cross-jurisdictional, cross-sector groups that address groundwater issues. And then this idea of fairness. So this idea of trust and fairness, and again, getting at that idea of this justice, trust, legitimacy kind of capacity. We see that there's generally quite a bit of agreement that water is fairly distributed within their LGU. But one where there's a lot of uncertainty is perhaps maybe the participants didn't have enough information about this issue is whether community members and organizations perceive that groundwater planning processes in their LGU are fair. So the fairness in decision-making is where there's a little more of a uncertainty around that issue. We also asked what may be constraints to groundwater protection. What do LGU staff think are constraints for groundwater protection for them? So again, the number one issue there was lack of financial resources. Over 90% of our participants believe that, reported that financial resources is a slight to severe constraint for groundwater protection. Again, these are the top five constraints identified by our LGU staff and our participants in the study. So lack of staff, grant opportunities, again, very much related to the issue of financial resources. And this idea of other issues taking priority over groundwater may be reflective of larger strategic plans and the lack of prioritization of groundwater across the state. So I'll summarize all these findings using the capacity model towards the end. So our second objective here also was to ask LGU staff what their needs are. One in terms of developing the expertise needed to address groundwater issues, but also to help build capacity around groundwater protection. So here are the top five types of support. So one question we asked was, what types of support areas of need do you have around developing technical expertise around groundwater? So over 70% of our participants reported that a simple web-based map showing groundwater use in their area would be highly useful information, a high need for LGUs. One of the things that you will notice here is that there is a lot of informational needs that go towards developing technical expertise, but the information need is not a general information need. As you look through these items, you'll see that there's a lot of interest in getting information that is more localized. So there's a real need for information that's local to the LGUs. This next set of questions we asked about, so if you remember, we started out with the survey asking about the roles around groundwater protection. So we kind of came back to that idea and asked, how important do you think each one of these roles are in addressing groundwater issues? So engaging community members and education outreach. So what I have up here on this chart are means. So these are averages. Based on the averages, engaging community members and education outreach were the top rated in terms of highest importance for addressing groundwater issues. And the next set of questions that we asked around groundwater roles is then, so we asked, how important do you think these different roles are for groundwater protection? And we followed that up by asking, well, now, how effective do you think your LGU is in performing these roles? So here's the findings from there. So that the response options went from very ineffective to very effective. So one of the things that, the key finding here from this chart is really that although LGU staff believe that community engagement and education and outreach are highly important in terms of addressing groundwater issues, their level of effectiveness in that area is rated fairly low. See, so again, these are self-reported levels of effectiveness or performance. And so I have this chart organized from top to bottom by the differences in importance versus effectiveness. So what this means is that community engagement, public education outreach were identified as a highest area of need for our participants. So we did that kind of all over again with a different set of items around addressing around groundwater protection actions. So these are all geared towards giving us a sense of different levels of capacity. So these are again about tracking capacity levels and trying to understand how important do our participants think these different levels of capacities are. So things like promoting groundwater protection as a cultural norm, that would be more of a relational capacity. Building local individuals a sense of responsibility, adapting to changing environmental conditions, providing meaningful feedback on progress made toward groundwater protection. All of these items were rated as highly important by our LGU staff in the study. So we followed this up by asking, well then, you know, you told us how important these actions are. Could you tell us how effective do you think your LGU is in taking these actions? And so you'll see in this chart that there's a vast difference between the importance of these actions versus how effective they are, and which really points to a need for capacity building. There is a need for, they believe that all these actions are very important in terms of addressing groundwater issues, but there perhaps are lack of programs or that capacity to take these actions. And finally, we also asked, you know, what type of support do you need? What type of needs do you have in terms of building capacity at the local level? So some of the top rated ones, you know, about 70% of participants reported that increasing local knowledge around groundwater protection is an important need. The ability to define and communicate groundwater issues to a wide range of audiences, again, a very important need for our participants at LGUs. And so these are, again, the top five most important needs. And we had a list of about 15 or so needs that were identified and asked about on the survey. So that's a lot of charts and numbers. What does this all mean? And I'll put this in the capacity framework here. So here, again, the goal is about identifying what are the constraints. And this capacity framework is really useful in terms of thinking about what may be potential constraints, but also delving deeper into then, you know, identifying specific constraints. So at the individual level, you know, if you remember the chart about groundwater quality and quantity and the technical expertise, it seems like there's a real need to develop technical expertise, particularly around groundwater quality issues. And secondly, there's the needs that were identified by participants were also centered around informational needs. So that all of that goes around to developing that need for technical expertise. And then financial resources. So financial resources was identified as a top constraint around groundwater protection, as well as opportunities for grants and so forth. At the relational level, one of the things we did identify, so when we go back to this idea of the importance and performance of different roles and different needs for our LGU staff, there's a real need to enhance and develop expertise in community engagement. So that goes back to this idea of defining problems, groundwater problems, but also the ability to communicate problems with a wide range of audiences, which may include landowners and farmers, residents, and so forth. At an organizational level, you know, one of the constraints identified was the lack of staff that are very devoted to addressing groundwater issues. And then this issue of, you know, other priorities, so other issues, perhaps it's surface water issues or other natural resource issues that are taking priority over groundwater protection, that within organizations is coming out to be a pretty strong constraint. And then finally, at the programmatic level, we see a lot of uncertainty and disagreement about whether there are any cross-jurisdictional groups, cross-sector groups that address groundwater issues, share data, and coordinate action for groundwater protection. And then at this level of justice and fairness, there seems to be a lot of uncertainty about whether there is fairness and equity in terms of decision-making around groundwater within their LGU. So, finally, I have four broad kind of take-home points, and you might call them recommendations. So even if you wipe out everything you just heard me talk about, these would be the four key points that I'd like for you to take home with you. So first is there is a real need at the local level for information to develop technical expertise, but at the same time, that information has to be very tailored to local needs. So there is need for locally specific information, so groundwater trends, whether that's quality or quantity. that's very localized. There's need, one example was that need for a simple web-based map, but that also is at a very local level. Two, our respondents identified community engagement as a very important role that they could play, but I believe that they're not as effective in that role. So there's a real need to enhance their capacity to engage with community members. So one of the things that needs that were identified was increasing knowledge of community members on groundwater issues, but also communicating with the public about groundwater issues. And so that there's a real need for programs and training opportunities to develop more effective education outreach programs, but also more effective intervention strategies that are around developing more civic engagement, more community engagement around groundwater. Third, there's a big need for resources, so that would be financial resources, but also staffing needs to address groundwater issues. So this is more at an organizational level. So one, there is a need perhaps for more resources in high-risk areas, but you know, other potential avenue might be more training and opportunities around grant writing, for example, that are more project and program based. And then this idea of prioritizing groundwater protection is also very important. When you know, we all know when things are not highly prioritized, they fall to the bottom of our priority list, and we don't really pay as much attention, put as much effort to those programs or issues. And then finally, this idea of programmatic capacity. If there already are cross-jurisdictional, cross-sector groups that share data about groundwater or coordinate action around groundwater protection, there needs to be an increased use of those types of groups. But if there aren't, there definitely seems to be a need to develop groups that go across jurisdictions to share information and develop programs that address groundwater issues. So with that, I'd like to thank all my research partners, collaborators. Special thanks to Sharon Pfeiffer, who's here. I think without her vision and partnership and insights and the support that I received throughout the project, this work would not have been possible. So both the study with the SWCDs as well as LGUs. The one area that we are potentially looking into is perhaps expanding this work and looking at other types of stakeholders, you know, watershed districts or even residents and landowners. And finally, I also like to thank all the participants who took the time to take the survey and the funders without whom I would not have the ability to spend time and resources on this. And I'll take questions at this point. My contacts are up here too.
Yeah, thanks for the talk. Did you see any differences in your statistic right here? in the rural versus the more populated local government units?
So we haven't really analyzed the data in that way, so looking at rural versus more urban areas. We did look at cities versus counties because that was a clear distinction in the study, which was also easier to make. But that's a really interesting point, so looking at the rural versus urban. I will definitely do that, and I can follow up with you on that. I can't really make any assumptions about what the differences may be without looking at the data.
Question. Yes. About trends. My sense is since the increasing involvement of local governments in water resources management since, say, the mid-1980s, that I'd like to think that capacity has increased or is on the... So do you have a sense of that, or if not that, like what, you know, would it be possible to do something like this in the future and measure any kind of trends?
Anyway. Yep, and so that's exactly the goal with the social measures monitoring system. So use that as a method to track across time. You know, how, you know, if we know the baseline, how does that change over years? You know, we might do periodic surveys, we might do interviews and so forth to try to track how this capacity levels at all different levels might change. So the social measures monitoring system, I should if it's not available, just by Googling, it's all. If you are interested, I could send you some of that material as well. But that, you know, provides us with a framework of capacity assessment over time. But it also is very detailed in terms of providing, you know, here are the specific indicators and even questions that you can ask to do these assessments yourself.
Can you give some more detail about who your survey respondents were? Were they primarily SWCD staff? Were public works staff? Municipal water suppliers included?
Yep, so they were all city and county staff, non-elected staff that had anything to do with environmental management. So there could potentially be staff that work with water, some may work with invasive species, and any kind of any natural resource issue.
The urban versus rural, did you contact League of Minnesota Townships?
I'm not sure. I don't think we did. I'd have to look back at that. You know, I have to say honestly, I don't know. I think we did include cities and townships in the study, so we must have contacted to get the contact list. I wasn't working on this project at the point when, you know, things were getting set up, but I can definitely get back to you. I would say that we most likely did to get as wide of a representation. Sharon might know a little bit more about that too. Yeah, but that would be, you know, I think a great area for future work is, you know, try to get a better sense of different types of stakeholders and, you know, especially in terms of understanding capacity at different levels and different stakeholders, that would be very interesting work to do.